Welcome to Namely 90s. Wow. The podcast that takes you back to the time before smartphones, Google, and Y2K. Join your hosts as they relive the pop culture that shaped a generation and the parts that many people wish they could forget. Listen in to the conversation about how the decade defined those who spent their childhood there and how it shaped them as adults. So, turn down the grunge and dial up the internet. Let's get started. It's time for Namely 90s.
Hello and welcome to the show. You're listening to Namely 90s. This is Andrew. And of course, over there, we've got the wonderful Brandon, who is not responding to that, apparently. Anyway, you're listening to Namely 90s, as stated, and you can find us online at namely90s.com, or you can find us on Twitter at namely90s, and that's with a 90s. So, just wanted to check in with Brandon here, see how things are going. What's up over there?
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah. Hi. It's the week of Halloween.
Yes.
So we're going to do something special for this episode instead of basing it on a month in a year. We're trying out a format, or an idea for, just what we're going to be doing for our Christmas special. And, yeah, so, but before that, like I said, we're going to be doing a Christmas episode thing. Mm-hmm. So if you could do us a favor, lovely listeners, can you visit namely90s.com/holiday, where you can find a link to a Google form, because we want to know what your favorite or least favorite holiday episode of 90s TV is for a special project that we're cooking up for December. You can submit now through the end of November. Thank you for listening and for your submissions. It'll help us suss out what we want, what you want us to watch. So for today, we each picked an episode of 90s television that had a Halloween theme to it.
Yes.
And those episodes are Halloweeny, Season 2, Episode 5, The Adventures of Pete and Pete, and Simpsons Treehouse of Horror 5, Season 6, Episode 6. And
yes.
Yeah, I thought we would start with the lesser known one, The Adventures of Pete and Pete, Halloweeny.
Yeah, so I wasn't even aware that that existed as a show, first of all. But I did watch it, and at first I was like, wow, 24 minutes of this? And then it became watchable. I mean, is this a show that you watched with regularity, or?
When I was a kid, yeah. Because there were three seasons. It came out between 93 and 95, I want to say. And it's kind of like, and the first like indie show that like before indie was a thing, I think it was like an indie style show. If you don't remember or know, which I probably should have prepped you on, it's two brothers. They're both named Pete. And they live
seems
in a,
confusing.
Yeah.
Were they like stepbrothers? Like what, what's on their birth certificate?
Pete,
different middle names,
probably different middle names.
You could differentiate them by their social security number. I don't know. It's just like from an insurance standpoint, seems kind of confusing.
Maybe one's in the show they say Big Pete or Little Pete, to when you don't know who they're talking about.
Yeah.
And then they're two clearly different people since they have an age gap between them.
Yeah.
And then they live in the town of Wellsville, which is kind of quirky and
quirky suburbia.
Suburbia is a great way to put it. And then the premise of this episode is what did you think the premise of the episode
I was? Guess well I think the premise was it was sort of like this there was sort of Halloween lore around this, like these people who set the record for visiting like 300 some houses trick-or-treating.
Yep.
And the idea was they wanted to, little Pete wanted to break the record. Older Pete was sort of, or Big Pete was sort of done with the whole, you know, Halloween thing. And then there was this group of sort of vandals or hooligans smashing pumpkins and trying to ruin Halloween for everybody. So
the pumpkin eaters.
Yeah. Which this was like the last Halloween if they kept doing their thing. Mm-hmm. So I thought the funny thing was like at the beginning, the little like the crossing guard guy who drives in on his, like, I think it's like an electric bike.
Yeah.
And that reminded me, I was thinking about it on my way here. Do you remember, I think it was middle school where we had the electric bike club, electric bike racing team, which of course was helmed by none other than our creepy statutory rapist science teacher.
Forgot about that part.
And, it just totally reminded me of that time. Were you on the electric bike racing team?
I was on the electric bike racing team. I'd helped build one of the electric bikes. Yeah.
I just brought back a memory. I was like, wow, I'm back in middle school, guys. Electric bikes were a thing back then. Now it's like everything's electric and hovers and all sorts of wacky stuff.
Right. Well, I don't think they actually hover.
No.
But yeah, it was ahead of its time.
He has like a flashing light on top of his helmet. He's just such a doofus.
I like that character.
But
before we get that far into it, I just want to say the intro song is the best intro song in all of television.
Who is it that performs it? Is anyone we know?
No. Well, it's someone I know. It's called they're called Polaris. I believe they're 3/4 of a different band, but one of the guys couldn't make it for the recording, so
if there was a subtitle playing, you know how they have subtitles that try to describe the music? It would be like generic grunge plays. That's what it would say.
It was more of like an indie grunge, but funny you mention that. There is one of the lines that they say is people don't know what it is because it's so like mumbled and indistinguishable that if we did closed caption it would just say indistinguishable 90s grunge mumble. But another core concept of the episode I would say is, it's called Halloweeny, which is what they call the kids that are too old to be trick-or-treating. That's right. Trick-or-treating. When is too old to trick-or-treat?
I don't know. Like when you have a job and can just buy your own candy.
That's a good point.
That's my thought.
I feel like it was a little older than that. Like middle school, we didn't really go out trick or treating.
Yeah, like if you have a Tinder account, like you're not allowed to trick or treat. Just a thought.
And then the pumpkin smashing. I believe Big Pete and Ellen, his best friend, female friend, come across an alley full of just smashed pumpkins.
And then the urge to smash one of those pumpkins overtakes Big Pete.
Yes.
So it's like an internal struggle, really, where he wants to, he's like done with Halloween. He's almost like become one of the pumpkin smashers or whatever they're called.
Pumpkin eaters.
But yet he had this brotherly, you know, connection to try to help his brother with Halloween, you know, it's just kind of because his friend got with Michelle. How do you say it? Trachtenberg.
Yep.
Was the little Pete's friend that was not able to go trick or treating for whatever reason. I missed that part.
I think didn't they get teepeed or something by the pumpkin eaters?
Yeah. Like they decided, his parents decided she couldn't go. So then Big Pete, of course, wanting to help his brother, decides to join him.
So Nona, played by Michelle Trachtenberg, her dad in the show, they call him Nona's Pop, but it's actually played by famous musical artist Iggy Pop.
Oh, huh. Did I know that? That's interesting.
Doesn't let them play or doesn't let her go with them to do the record. And so Big Pete gets sucked into it. I had one thing. Why would you carve jack-o'-lanterns and put it on your head if you hate Halloween?
I know. That's a good point.
The pumpkin eaters, they rode around, and the way that they weren't caught is they had jack-o'-lanterns on top of their head so that you wouldn't know who they were.
Also, like, that would be super heavy. Could you imagine? And there were big pumpkins to get your head inside of it.
Yeah, giant pumpkins. They fit snugly. They would smell after a while, I would think, because they didn't change the jack-o'-lanterns up. So like you're saying, the lore, 15-year-old Ned Richman went trick-or-treating and then they found out he was a Halloweeny. One of the funniest things I think as an adult watching the episode was no one wanted to be around him, not even in the yearbook. So they showed a picture of him, but he was like upside down. Hanging from a tree. And then no one in the yearbook was next to him. Like it was just a blank page and him in the middle of it. That was pretty good.
But then of course the strategy was, so the costumes they wore were space suits. Mm-hmm. And so he just was going to keep the visor closed, but then toward the end he gets kind of, you know, cocky and the visor is up, and then it's actually Ned who recognizes him. Mm-hmm. And sort of reveals him, and then they can sort of get separated and it's a whole thing.
Yeah. And then, so Big Pete ends up at like a haunted house or something where the pumpkin eaters are trying to recruit him. And then Little Pete's right about to finish get the record, 300 candy. I think he was like one house away. So,
yep.
But he hears over his intercom or radio that Big Pete's in trouble and goes to help him instead. I thought, like, if you're that close and you're right at the door, just go trick or treat.
Just do it real quick. Yeah.
Then go save your brother.
And then the other thing is, like, at the end, they're trying to tempt him to smash the pumpkin and join their group. And then here's the thing. So I'm like, what's his way out here? And then he smashes the pumpkin on his head. So it's like, he still smashed the pumpkin, which was dumb.
Yeah.
But yeah, he smashes it on his head. And then,
was it a pumpkin, or was he giving him a like pumpkin head, jack-o'-lantern head?
I don't remember. I think it was just a pumpkin. He was telling him to like break it to prove that he was. But then of course, Little Pete and the crossing guard arrive in the nick of time to save the day.
I thought that scene really kind of, before that was like really when they were tempting Pete, it was kind of either like Empire Strikes Back where Darth Vader is like, join me.
Sure.
Or the Emperor in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
Do it. So it turns out the leader of the Pumpkin Eaters is Endless Mike, which is a recurring bully played by Rick Gomez.
Well, yeah, that's when they were like, it's Endless Mike. And I'm like, who? Because I've never watched the show.
Right. And he's like, who did you think it was? Mr. Tasty, which is a reference to the season 2 premiere where they try to find a ice cream guy that disappeared because they found out a secret about him or something.
Oh, interesting. It's Rick Gomez. And I recognized the guy and I could not put my finger on where I knew him from.
Yep.
And I know him from the HBO miniseries Band of Brothers. That's where I know him from. And other things too, of course. But
he's shown up in acting. His brother was on the TV series Chuck.
He's in quite a bit. I mean, he's honestly in quite a bit.
He went on to be a semi-successful actor.
Yeah. NYPD Blue, Justified, blah, blah, blah. There's more than that, but...
And then one of the best. So throughout the episode, like I said in the beginning, the band that plays the intro song, they also play others. Like they have an entire album. I actually forgot to grab it before we started recording, but I have it on vinyl. The music from Adventures of Pete and Pete. They did like 13 songs that they kind of sprinkle through the series. And Waiting for October plays at the end during the comeuppance for the Pumpkin Eaters and Big Pete's monologue about, I don't know, being brothers or something. But yeah. So what, on a scale of 1 to 10, what did you think?
I don't know. I was sort of, my enthusiasm was minimal just because it was like, you know, low def 90s television,
which you talked about last episode.
But by the end of it, I was kind of invested in it and I wanted to know what was going to happen and was kind of rooting for these kids. So nice. Definitely relatable. So 10 being like best, like favorite Halloween episode, basically. Mm-hmm. I'd give it a 7. I feel like the one thing it lacked was like significant spookiness.
Yes, I also would give it a 7. Although as a kid, because I remember, I think it was either the year it came out or they replayed it another year. But I remember going trick or treating and then wanting to be home in time to watch that and then being spooked out by the pumpkin eaters. Mm-hmm. But yeah, as an adult, 7. I'll give it a 7.
Okay,
but that's why I picked it. That and you picked the Treehouse of Horror I would have picked, which I was surprised by.
I just remember
by.
It really well. It's such a good one.
Honestly, I think because I spent the time looking through every single Treehouse of Horror to see if I wanted to pick one for this. And that is, I think, one, the best Treehouse of Horror, Treehouse of Horror 5, Season 6, Episode 6. And two, my favorite, personally. But yeah, let's...
Yeah, well, I think it's... So I haven't watched The Simpsons in a long time, but I remember watching it in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And it's just such a... the show, it's so smart and it's quite funny. I mean, that seems like an obvious thing, but like coming back to it, watching it as an adult, never having done so, like the humor, it's smart and it works. You know, some of it's kind of slapstick, but it's pretty good. Right. And I was just reading on the, before we get into the particulars, I was reading on the Wikipedia page that the, I guess David Merkin, I don't know if he was a director, writer, and producer of The Simpsons. He, or at least that's his general job. I don't know what it is for The Simpsons, but it says he deliberately placed more graphic violence in the episode due to complaints about excessive violence in the show in general, I was watching it. I was like, wow, this is really violent.
Yeah. Well, so like the first Treehouse of Horror opens with Marge on the stage and she's like, this is going to be a violent episode. If you have young kids, please don't let them watch. And then for the second one, they're like, apparently some of you didn't listen to me last year when I told you not to let your children watch this episode and complain to the networks. Don't let your children watch this episode. And now we're on the fifth one.
Right.
And she's like, doesn't she just like give up? And
she says it's so scary that Congress won't allow it to be broadcast.
Oh,
and so they're going to play the fictional Western film 200 miles to Oregon. So they showed just like they go to a black and white thing of like a covered wagon going across the prairie. And I feel like that's honestly, I feel like that's where Family Guy got the whole like cutting to Conway Twitty joke.
Cutting to the 3 whole minutes of Dancing in the USA or Stewie did the dancing 60s or 50s musical. Yeah, I actually wrote that in my notes. Pre-Family Guy joke.
Yeah. And then so the first short story they do in short stories
Before we get to that, I also liked because they cut out from the fictional Oregon movie to Bart and just his voice going, "Do not attempt to adjust your TV." And I believe that's a Twilight Zone reference.
Yeah, and then they like get to an argument, him and Homer, in the background.
Sorry, you the first.
So basically, it's a take on The Shining, which I of course never saw because it's me.
Right,
and
they call it.
There's just many. So basically, the Simpsons are going to become caretakers at Mr. Burns' haunted lodge while it's closed for the winter. And it like opens with them trying to drive there and like, well, it's been a long trip. And then like they left the front door unlocked, so they had to go back and drive again. Then they left the back door unlocked and they had to come back again. By the third one, they're like, we left Grandpa at the gas station and Homer just keeps driving.
That was pretty good.
That was pretty good. Go ahead.
As they're going, so I mean, this is my favorite Treehouse of Horror bit, of all the ones. I like when, as they're being shown the grounds, Bart just like cutting through the hedge maze, and Groundskeeper Willie's there, and he's like, "Hey, Willie, I found a way through your shortcut through your hedge maze," and he's like, "I'm going to kill this kid and make him into haggis," and Bart has the shinning,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he's like, he says something about The Shining, but they don't want to get sued. I always love that kind of humor. Like, they're like, we're not going to say it, but we're going to go ahead and say it.
You mean Shining. Do you want to get sued?
The other thing that's funny about it that they kind of parody on is when they're walking through the mansion, mm-hmm. like the elevator opens and blood pours out of it. And he's like, oh, that's weird. The blood usually comes out on a different floor. There's always something like that where there's like real obvious signs that this is about to go real sideways and people are like, oh, well, you know,
like a bird is like listening off. It's on top of an ancient Indian burial ground and like four other like red flags right there.
And the thing I also like is, you know, Mr. Burns, obviously like the quintessential rich person. He's like, okay, plebes, sure. Like I'm going to take away your beer and cable so you'll work harder.
Yeah,
which is the next part that happens. They cut those things off and then they leave. And I think it's funny that like Homer's watching TV and then it goes out and he's like, oh, well, I guess I'll just have a beer. And he goes to the fridge. There's no beer. He's like, oh, well. And then he's like, immediately after, like, I'm going to kill all of you. Like, I like the accelerated nature of these episodes. Like it felt rushed, but at the same time it was just kind of funny how quickly it escalated.
Yeah. And on the TV, Maggie's spelling blocks when Homer turns off the
red rum.
Yeah. Which is also from The Shining. That escalation is great. I love when Mo is the ghost that he sees at the bar and he's like, if you want a beer, Homer, you're going to have to kill all of your family.
And well, this is the one too, where they're walking through the halls. I think it's near the time when the blood pours out of the elevator and they're talking about like bad or scary things. And then someone mentions John Denver. Someone's like, John Denver.
Too soon? Was it too
soon? No, well, not really.
Oh, wait, it was the year before. So this was aired in 96. John Denver died the following year.
Oh, well, not too soon. Okay.
It didn't age
well, but
yeah. So my favorite scene is when Marge goes into Homer's room and she's like, if I look at what he's been typing, I can get an insight into his mind. And it just says feeling fine.
Yeah, but then the wall's like, you can see what he's written on the walls. Was it no beer and
no TV? I think Homer, it's no TV crazy. And no beer make Homer go crazy. And then Homer walks in.
What does she breaks the glass and there's a bat in it. And it says use in case of
spousal insanity
yeah. or something.
But before that, Homer walks in and he's like, what do you think, Marge? I'm thinking of titling it no TV and no beer make Homer something something. And she's like, go crazy. And he's like, don't mind
if I do. Love that part. This is craziness. Yeah. Oh my gosh. That definitely needs to be hopefully in the video podcast.
Yeah.
But then I think the funny thing that's a recurring theme throughout this is like, finally, after, Homer gets locked in the food cellar, but then somehow like the people he's delusionally seeing open the cellar and let him out. I was like, wait, hold on. Whoa. Yeah. But then basically, Bart tries to channel groundskeeper Willie to have him help.
Yep.
And he like runs in and then immediately gets axe murdered, which I think is like the running theme in each story. He just gets murdered by an axe every time.
That's true. And which another thing is, I haven't seen The Shining all the way through, but I have seen How It Should Have Ended. And I'm pretty sure that's exactly what happens in the movie too, and book, I guess. But the groundskeeper comes to help and then just is immediately murdered.
But I guess the upshot is that at the end, like Homer's about to kill everyone outside in the snow. Mm-hmm. And then they discover groundskeeper Willie's
portable
TV.
Oh, yeah.
Which obviously starts to soothe Homer and they're watching it. And then it like cuts to them at the end, basically frozen, still watching the TV before it cuts to like some sort of Broadway musical. And then Homer becomes homicidal again before the episode ends.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, that would do that to me too. It was a chorus line, I think.
I thought that was a good twist because it's in the movie it's just Jack that ends up frozen out in the snow, but the entire family's frozen. I thought that was funny. And I think it was the Tony Awards that
That's right. So moving into the next one, we just get to talking, man, and we get going.
Time traveling toaster, not my favorite.
Not my favorite, and also once again, basically the precursor to the Family Guy multiverse episode. It's kind of funny. So basically, I did think it was funny. Homer gets his hand stuck in the toaster somehow, and like bashes it against stuff and gets it off, and he's like laying on the ground. They're like, "Homer, your hand's in the toaster again." He's just like has to smash it.
The thing I didn't get was, it's Homer. How did he repair the toaster and make it into a time machine?
Yeah, because he's an idiot. But yeah. I think it's like he's such an idiot that like he accidentally made something really powerful. Yeah. But basically, he goes back in time. He smashes a mosquito in like prehistoric times, and he comes back and Ned Flanders rules the world.
Butterfly effect.
Yeah, exactly. And so he gets out of that world after he has to go to re-education.
A nice glass of warm milk, a little nap, and a total frontal lobotomy.
Yeah. So he gets out of there. And then he kills all the dinosaurs when he sneezes on them.
That was hilarious.
But then he comes out and he's like in this real upscale house, and all the family is wearing like, nice upscale clothes. And he's like, this one's pretty good. And then he asks, are there any donuts? And they're like, what's a donut? And then he screams and like leaves. And then shortly after he leaves, it starts raining donuts and they go, oh, it's raining again.
Yeah, he should have stayed in that universe because Patty they were going to Patty and Selma's funeral.
Yeah,
they're going
to take the Lexus to Patty and Selma's funeral. Yeah. I thought that was pretty good.
And then Kang and Kodo show up right at the end, which I thought was great.
Yep. And then once again, Groundskeeper Willie, he's going to help Homer, but then Maggie strikes him down with an axe.
Oh, yeah.
And then speaks in James Earl Jones' voice, this is indeed a disturbing universe.
And I think they actually got James Earl Jones.
Yeah, it was. And then he goes back in time, smashes everything, and comes back to what appears to be a very normal Springfield. You know, the house is the same. They're eating breakfast still. But then they start like licking it up with lizard tongues. And he goes, close enough, and just keeps eating. I mean, it's fun. It's maybe not my favorite either.
Yeah, Jurassic Park was big at the time. That's why I think they went with the dinosaur. It was the same sprawling dinosaur shot. And then Nightmare Cafeteria.
This one's funny because like lunch food for kids is truly horrifying. Like some of the stuff that they feed. And I like the grade F meat or the time. This is a different episode, but the time that they add Malk instead of milk with vitamin R. Like, drink Malk. That was pretty good.
I think that was separate from there's also Krusty Milk or Malk.
So in this episode, basically detention is overcrowded and they have bad quality meat in the cafeteria. So they decide basically to start eating children to reduce overpopulation and to, I guess, improve the meat. But then eventually it turns into them like trying to fatten up the students.
Yeah. Mrs. Krabappel was reading The Joys of Cooking Milhouse when the kids tried to escape.
Yeah, and she had gotten visibly like fat too. But I thought it was really funny when like the little German kid, they took him, and then like, the next day they had Oktoberfest and they were all eating sausages.
But I thought it was a cop out at the end when it was all a dream, because it's not a canon story anyways. So like, did they need?
Yeah, but I thought it was funny. Bart's like, something always happens at the end to save us, and then Milhouse falls into the. I like it was a Hamilton Beach student blender or something. Like they actually had a brand on it, which is a real brand. And then he's like, well, something always comes to save the Simpsons, and then they fall into the big blender, and then he wakes up from the dream, which again, sort of a cop out, especially because it's not part of the story arc, you know.
But then the inside out turning fog seeps in through a window.
Yeah. And I think the funny thing is that they then go into basically a parody of A Chorus Line, which I think is like a nod to the first short story with the Broadway reference.
Yeah, I didn't put that together, but I was just like, is this A Chorus Line when I was watching it? I was like, what?
That's so funny.
Which is also that one is the finale in A Chorus Line.
Yeah.
What do you rate it?
I also liked when at the end the dog comes in and drags Bart off screen by his intestines and eats him. Because that's dogs for you. Like, they just I feel like that's the thing with the cats are just waiting for you to die so they can eat you.
Oh yeah.
But so yeah, I mean, I'm going to give that a 9, honestly. It's wow. creepy. It's funny. It's a great show just generally. So I that's why I chose it. You know, it's definitely one of my favorites.
You know,
and watching it again as an adult was fun.
It's also a 9 for me for similar reasons. Yeah. It would be a 10 if the time traveling toaster was a little bit better.
Yeah.
Or the Nightmare Cafeteria. But yeah, it was a good watch. Highly recommend it if you're looking for something fun to watch this week from Halloween. And I think that's it for this week's special edition of Namely 90s. Remember, you can find new episodes out every Monday. And please don't forget to visit our website, namely90s.com/holiday, to get that Google form and submit your favorite or least favorite holiday episode of 90s TV. Now through American Thanksgiving. Find us on Twitter at namely90s with a 90s, or find our personal accounts at bshwitty and at namelyandrew, and tell us what you want us to talk about on future episodes. Please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, YouTube. I forgot to write one for this one. Sorry.
Pumpkin Eater.
Deezer, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and wherever you get your podcasts at. I'm Brandon. That's Andrew. And have a happy Halloween.
We hope it's spooktacular.
Ooh.
And out.